Hello, everyone, and I'm really excited about this podcast episode. Los Bat Boys talk about the first game back of La Liga in this abridged format. It was the 1-1 derby against Levante, and it was a soul-crushing draw that leaves us with just 1 point and Diakabi committing his third PK in two games in the 95th minute against Ruben Vezo. How much of this is to blame on Diakabi? How much of this can be attributed to Saladas and the lack of clarity and vision there? The Bat Boys duel it out. We also talk about the youngster Guillemon's debut and how we're really excited about the things we saw during this game. And lastly, where this leaves us with our Champions League chances. We're in seventh place with several other teams dropping points. What are the chances of us clinching that top four spot? All of this in this episode. We're really excited. We're glad to be back. We're glad that you guys are back, and we'll see you on the other side. After a travesty of a game, a 95th minute a PK by Diakabi, three PKs, two games. How are we feeling? Tell me, give me your feelings right now, Sam. Let's talk.
Tim, I'm in. I think it's 74 degrees sunny here in Southern California with a nice breeze, but conditions do not match my mood, my friend. I'm still bitter about this match. I couldn't even really rejoice in the failures of other teams that I love to rejoice in. The Atletico Madrid tie, normally yeah. I would be euphoric about that. Getafe, nothing better than seeing Getafe have a lead and give it up. Today, Real Sociedad just managed a tie at home. I took no joy from any of those because of how bitter I am about what happened at the end of that Valencia match. And then I have to say, on your birthday of all days.
On my birthday. You know, in typical Valencian fashion, they can't just give me a nice little gift for my birthday. This is the theme to me. This feels like normal, though, that this I have this low level of paranoia and anger at the game that's upcoming and the game that just concluded. So in one way, it feels normal. Like we're getting back to normal. San Valencia starting over, and this is what's going on. This is how we start. And also, I don't know. This should have been a normal derby game, 1-0, and it had to go like this. Unbelievable. And you know, I really love my birthday, Sam. I really cherish my birthday. And I usually have 30 days of celebration. This was the day
that's
one.
Right.
And it was bat themed. I mean, my family, my mom gave me a bat cake and we had bat little streamers. And then this happened and I canceled the birthday party.
Yeah, I'm glad you preempted me on the birthday bat cake. I was going to make fun of you for that. But I would just say that this in some ways actually comports with your previous birthdays in which you had all these expectations, but then nobody showed up. Or like your girlfriend at the time didn't show up, and she ended up. You found out that she was on a date with Alfredo. So yeah, I mean, so anyway, so I just
man. Get your story straight.
Yeah,
unbelievable.
Yeah. There's Tim. This I tweeted that this felt like deja vu to me because Valencia has lost several matches, but they've lost some big matches this year, 3-0. And this one, as well as the first game of the season, and this felt like the first game of sort of a second season in a way, a season within a season. Those were the two most frustrating matches for me, the Real Sociedad match and this one, because, you know, we had the 3 points locked up. It was in extra time. We didn't play hugely impressive in either match, but we had the 3 points. And if you're going to be a Champions League team, sometimes you just have to lock in those points even when you're not playing well. And we were in both matches, we were in a prime scenario, and we simply just gave it away. On free kicks, we, you know, I think on a free kick, when you're a defender in with like 3 minutes left or with 2 minutes left, there's like three things you can't do. You can't, you have to stay goal side on your player. You have to keep, you can't commit a handball, and you can't tackle your player in front of the ref. Right. And then in those two matches, the first one, Coquelin throws his hand out and commits a very flagrant handball. And in this one, Diakabi tackles his player in front of, and Ruben Veso. How many times has Ruben Veso scored on a free kick? Probably like once in 10 years, right?
Yeah.
Like,
I don't
know. Ruben Veso too. Well, I couldn't believe it.
I know. Well, before we dive into Diakabi, I think overall, maybe it'd be good to just chat through the game in general. I thought I'll throw out a few topics that I thought. One, I think both teams looked a little just rusty. I think that's the theme of this like first week. Two, I don't think we really saw any standouts. Performances, maybe any themes other than Guillamon. I was like, I really
want to talk Guillamon about was a standout.
Yeah, that was a standout. But overall, I thought not much to write about. Maybe we can talk about a few players, but let's talk about Guillamon first, and then maybe if a few others that maybe you had. So I was, you know, a week ago we were like, who is really Guillamon? We can't really watch him. We can't really assess him. We have to take Salada's as basically his judgment on this. And I think this was a largely a vindication, right? I mean, he played the entire game. He seems very, very smart. Yeah. I never saw him out of position. He's it seemed like he was the more veteran center back than Diakabi was. And then he plays the, you know, second assist ball that gets Gaia through that results in the goal. So I really was impressed by him. What do you think?
I was really impressed with the ball at his feet too. I mean, I feel as if so much, you know, maybe you have a youth player coming in, he might play well defensively, but you know, you're gonna see some nerves when they're distributing the ball. But he was so smart with the ball at his feet. I was really, he just was a composed player, a smart player. He ended up, you know, he got us the extra man advantage too by taking that second yellow. I was really, really impressed with him. I hope, you know, his contract expires at the end of the season. So I hope Cesar, I hope the team are really working toward trying to extend him, because I think he could be not just critical for us in these next 10 matches, but critical for us in the future. So I was really impressed. That was a huge, a huge advantage, something to look forward to is to continue to watch him play.
Yeah, one thing that stood out to me before the goal, the ball swings over, Danny Parejo gets it, Gaia takes off, Danny Parejo doesn't play it to him, and I think the ball kind of swung back around, ended up at Guillamon. The same play happened again, and Guillamon said, oh, you should have played it to him the first time. And then he played it to Gaia, and it resulted in a goal. And I just thought that was, like, I don't know, a really interesting play. Like, hey, Danny, I know you're the experienced one here, but, like, that ball should have gone. So, I don't know, just it was really interesting to see that. And I think it speaks a lot of his intelligence. I just think he's probably a really intelligent player. Resulted in, you know, him being in the right place all the time. Great. So really excited about him. Glad he'll probably continue to get a spot. I think another theme too for me is Geddes. The same.
Yeah.
I think there were some moments. So I think he had generally the same theme with Geddes as he just like can't really get that final touch, that clinical finish, that clinical touch. We saw it again today. However, I did see some moments where he was sort of taking control of the game around the 65th minute, 70th minute. Kind of putting his foot on the ball, like trying to get something started. So much of the same, but a little bit of a glimmer of hope there. What did you see there?
I think a lot of what I was looking on at Twitter was pretty critical of of Geddes, but you know, I thought he he skied the ball, hit the ball over the crossbar, but he also showed a bit of creativity and a bit of willingness to do something different toward the end. And sometimes his passes were just, he just didn't quite have the right pace on the pass. I think it's going to take a little bit of time for the team to look super comfortable. I wouldn't have expected him to come out and sort of look unplayable. I would say more broadly with the midfield, I did think that, you know, there were moments where we looked really good. That our counters looked really good. I thought one player who was remarkably sharp was Rodrigo. Really well taken goal, but throughout the match, his touch was clean, his passing was sharp. He and Gaia, I thought, were really strong on the left. Guedes creates space for those players too, because he runs so much. I wasn't too critical of him. I thought, and then Soler, I thought, played pretty well. I really wish he had gone far post on that one where he hit the crossbar. He didn't have a ton of angle there, but, he placed the ball and, he hit it with the inside of his boot. He hit it with power because it was bouncing, but he really could have played that far post. I think that would have been a typical goal by Soler, just a smart, clinical right. finish at the end. I'm here. Yeah.
Coquelin, I thought, had a pretty strong game. And generally, Levante just didn't – they had a few chances here around the box. They just didn't really cause as much problems defensively. Florenzi and even Diakabi and Guillaume didn't have much of a problem with Morales and Marti that I really saw. Where Levante, I think, had a little bit of success with, like, Campagna and Roshina and Bardi, I think, deeper in their midfield, that they were able to possess the ball. But I think that's really what we were looking to do, is give them space in front of us. I thought we had more of the chances, much of the run of the game in terms of around the final third. Even more of a letdown when Diakabi gives a really, really poor foul in the 95th minute on Ruben Bezo to give him a PK. And that would be the third PK in two games. What are your initial thoughts on this?
On the theme of Diakabi, you and I had this podcast earlier in the spring, kind of focused on the back line. And my position was, we shouldn't sell Diakabi right now because this is still a promising player who is just struggling with his confidence and his decision making. But we shouldn't be selling him kind of at the low point of his market value. I don't know anymore, right? Like now, I'm just kind of like, he might need a fresh start, right? He might not be able to. He might just be struggling so much, with his confidence, and he it really might be, the players might not be trusting him enough. This was really discouraging, a lapse of judgment, and I like Diakabi, right? Like, I really like him, and I felt bad for him, but this is a free kick, right? Like, he has time to think and to say to himself, okay, there's a free kick. There are three things I need to do. What do I need to do? Stay in front of my player, not tackle him in front of the ref, not throw a handball in front of the ball, which is another way he's committed a penalty before. This is it. These are the only three things I need to do. Like, it's not as if he's winded on a 60-yard dash down the field catching a player and he slide tackles at the wrong spot. Like, he is on a free kick. Like, this is just super simple. He is so much taller and stronger than Ruben Bezo. Like, there is just no need to do this. Like, just having, I, so, I mean, there was, you know, you and I were both shouting at our TVs at this moment. And I feel for Diakabi, but it was just like, how does this happen? You know, like, how does this happen? How do you just do this?
I think overall the Twitter sphere was resoundingly negative. And I think more literally, they were really pissed off. Do not want to see Diakabi back on the field again. Are kicking ourselves for not selling him for 40 million euros. I do think generally still he's a very good player. And I think with someone more senior there, it's night and day. And he should continue to have partnership with Paulista. I'm gonna double down with him. But thank God it was an empty stadium, Sam. It would have been brutal out there had poor Diakabi. And you see it on his face. You know, he's just such a young guy, and he just feels so badly about it. But his just long legs and sort of goofiness. He just has a lot of lapse of judgment in moments of the game, and a more veteran player can help snap him into play. So I don't know. I doubt Salata's in the short term will be moving forward with him. And Paulista is, from what I'm reading, kind of either doubtful or very close. It's like a day-by-day judgment call on him for Real Madrid. So I want to explore this point really quickly, though, for Diakabi. You know, we've talked about this a bit before. He's a younger player. He needs leadership and he needs coaching. Is this criticism and partly Salata's fault? Is Salata's not doing what he needs to do to discipline Diakabi and give him the structure or whatever he needs to develop him? Or is this something where it's like, hey, this is just something he can't really handle it in these high pressure situations?
Yeah, I mean, to me, this is kind of like, you know, if a player kicks the ball in his own net, it's like, oh, well, coaching, we should have had better coaching. You know, like, I don't buy the betting. Look, I think you could watch, and you did a really good tactical analysis after one match where you used some different photos of showing where, you know, how throughout the field we could be tighter defensively and maybe play a little bit smarter defense preventing ourselves from getting in some of these pressure situations. But this one, I just cannot put this on coaching. This is just too obvious. You just don't do this. Does Salatas have to tell him, you know, before every game, hey, in the 92nd minute on a free kick, don't tackle the player in front of the referee?
Here's where it's not something so specific like that, Sam, but the way you hold your trainings and the way you approach your team, the way maybe you're disciplined in the locker room, I think the way maybe Marcelino was, where everything was very sort of strict, very disciplined, down to the last tee, you instill that in your players. And what I've seen throughout the year and in that one tactical analysis was, you know, there's little lapses here and there where maybe Ferran doesn't get his player marked or here and there. And I think actually Ferran had one in this game, a free header in the box where maybe the way he's addressing these training sessions and how he's approaching it and what his focus is each session starts to come out in certain areas. So if I were him, it would be how do we focus on staying mentally sharp throughout the game or something like that, right? So I don't know. How long do these things happen before you say, hey, is the coach at fault here and we need to look at that? Or is it just the players and you just trade players, right? So where is that line, you know?
So, I would just say, since you brought up Marcelino and sort of a comparison with Marcelino, you know, the first game of the season when Coquelin threw out his arm, you know, that was Marcelino was the coach, right? Marcelino and Coquelin is a super mature player. So, I mean, I, you know, and and Diakabi also had a PK. I'm sure he committed multiple PKs last year, but he had a PK committed last year where he stuck out his arm. You know, he was like 3 inches taller than the player he was marking, and he still kind of put his arm way up and caught it on his hand on a corner. So I don't think you could put that on Solanes. I mean, I think the only real argument you could make is to say, you know, maybe we should have started Coakland. Kondogbia couldn't have played in this match because of suspension, but maybe we just because Diakabi's confidence is so poor, maybe we start Paulista. All right, sorry, Coakland in the back, put Wass in the middle. I don't think that was the move. I think this was the move. I just think that it didn't work out. I mean, it was super close.
I think we've been very supportive of Saladas, but ultimately it's like this comes down to his results. And if your team drops these games here and there, it's, you know, ultimately it's your coach's result. Point. I think more specifically what you said was starting Diakabi versus going a Coakland route, the better move here. I think still giving Diakabi the start was probably the better move, even though he did have, you know, continued challenge with his passes. He gave a few away to Parejo again. Yeah. Parejo kind of turns around, shrugs his shoulders. It remains to be seen. We'll see how the next few games goes with this quarter. Sort of Saladas has a lot of flexibility without injuries. So
I would just say, I mean, I think, you know, there was in both of those matches, the Real Sociedad match and this one, they both kind of had this air of inevitability, right? That we were going to give up, something. And I just, they were both similar too, in that they were both after these kind of tumultuous news environments regarding the club, you know, with respect to the Real Sociedad match. You know, it wasn't really clear what was going to happen to Marcelino. He was, you know, Matt Alemany looked as if he was on the way out. There's clear tension between the ownership and the manager. Here, you know, there's tension, I think, between the players and the ownership and the management, at least with respect to Garay. Concerns about Ferran, Ferran not starting was super interesting, right? They both had these, it wasn't super inspired football, which, I mean, I also think you can attribute to the fact that they haven't been playing. But there was something else off, right? Like, it just didn't look like we had, in either of those matches, we had, like, our full heart, we were fully committed. That I also have to say, I mean, given that we had a good result given that it looked as if we were going to have a good result, it was sort of impressive because Parejo played so poorly. I think, when Parejo doesn't play well, we really struggle as a team. And Parejo, and that was true with Marcelino, that was true with Saladas. And that's part of why I think you can't fully blame Saladas, because he really wants another player in there, right? Like, he wants somebody else that we can play, because, when Saladas, with Parejo, when Parejo's not playing well, like the 13th minute, you kind of know he's not going to play well the entire game.
That's a good point.
He just, it's just like one of those days. Whereas, like, take a very different player, like Sergio Aguero, like, he might, like, fluff like 3 balls in the first half, and then he'll score a hat trick in the second half. And you really just don't know, which player is going to show up at which moment. But, there needs to be a player that we could substitute in for Parejo in like the 60th minute, 65th minute, if, it's just not one of his days. We could, I mean, speaking of bad decisions, that Parejo free kick in the first half where it's really like, this is a dangerous place for us to take a free kick, and he gives a pretty soft, directly flat
square ball,
gets intercepted, and then like everybody's sprinting back. I mean, that was really bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Ferenczi had that amazing.
That must have been a. I mean, we seem to have these PK or these free kick plays. You know, this is not the first time we've had sort of these. I mean, think of the Chelsea free kick into, you know, near post. I thought that was a rehearsed free kick. I wonder if this was also a bit rehearsed and Parejo just didn't get it off or misread it and went forward with it anyways because that player was right there. But what a terrible outcome. I don't know what was going on there. And I don't think that was a good play anyhow. Just get that in the box. I don't get it. You know, so very weird. I thought it was a very weird play. And I blame Salatas for it. No, I'm just kidding.
I completely agree with you. It was a set play, but it was just, I mean, it was just not the time to make that. Like you make that call. Danny gets to make that call when he's standing in front of the ball and he's looking at which players are where. And that was just not the time to do it.
There was a second free kick towards the second half on the right side, and Danny, he played it perfectly. Yeah. Could not have been played better. Into the box, and of course, like through the legs of Diakabi off his plant foot, it like hits the post.
Yeah.
I think he's offside anyhow, but that should have been the first ball on that free kick anyhow. So we should. I was very impressed by Jose Campagna. I think we could pick him up for and get him a few minutes. What did you think?
Yeah.
Any highlights from Levante players?
Yeah, I mean, I really like a lot of the Levante midfielders. There's no one on this team though that I think, wow, this is a player we need to have.
I agree.
I think they have a lot. They have good players. They have a good team, but just not. I think we should be really. We should be really specific with the types of players that we want to get in the summer, and nobody on that team is screaming to me like somebody that warrants a significant investment from us.
Yeah, no, I agree. I just want to give a nod to some of those players. I thought they had a pretty good game, and they had a few runs that I thought. I think it was 0-0 first half. There's a corner kick. Campagna's taking it. I thought, wow, I mean, they were really staying in this game and we're giving them an opportunity here to get a goal first half. So I thought they did well to do that, given that we had most of the good chances. And I think we were lucky that they didn't get one of, you know, a lucky free kick on us or corner kick. And despite all that, they do get something in 95th minute. So, it's unfortunate, but always root for Levante. You know, you gotta root for their.
Oh yeah, well, I definitely want them. I was sad, you know, the red card was bittersweet. So obviously, I was super happy that we were gonna be a man up, but he's one of their most important players, and he's not playing in their next match, which is against Sevilla, and you'd really like. To see Sevilla lose some points. Which, Tim, maybe this is a good segue to the overall standings. Where do we sit right now?
Well, we are in seventh place now. I think when we lost that game, I thought – or tied that. It feels like a loss, doesn't it? I thought, wow, we are in big trouble for fourth place, and it is going to be tough. Right now in seventh, 43 points, 4 points behind Sociedad with 47 points. And Atletico drew. Getafe loses against Granada 2-0. They're at 46 points. So still very much in the race. And given, I think, just overall every team's form, I've seen bits and pieces, but no one looks that great. We still have a very strong chance to take advantage of these games.
Next week or this week, the Real Madrid match is going to be critical. I mean, right now we're 7 points behind Sevilla, 4 points behind Real Sociedad. You really don't want to see that increase. I think this is a huge match. It's in Madrid. I don't think we should expect to win, but you'd really like to see Valencia muster up a result in this one.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I have my eyes set on Sociedad. We, you know, they play Alaves next, but they also, if we can get a point here, Sam, they play, they go to Real Madrid, then Getafe. They also then go to Sevilla and Atletico, the remaining part of the schedule. So being 4 points behind them, if we can gain a point in this Madrid game, and of course get the wins where we should get them, that's really how we're going to, I think, close the gap here.
Yeah.
Drop more points. If we drop more points throughout the end of the season, we're really losing our chances.
I agree. Time is of the essence.
Yeah, let's look at Getafe's quick, too. I think Getafe actually has a little bit of a weaker schedule. They have Atletico, second to last game. But they've also – and they have Real as well. Again, none of these games are going to be easy, but Eibar, Valladolid, Sociedad. So they have a few games coming up. We really don't know, given the form of every – I mean, you said it best. No game is easy. All of these games are losable or winnable. So I would love to see Paulista come back and he's healthy and play against Real Madrid and give us a good foundation of get a tie their way at Madrid would be fantastic.
Yeah,
especially
I agree.
Especially what they did to us that first match. I'd love to steal a point from them.
Yeah. And I mean, that would in some ways revive your birthday. You know, it would be like if Kelly actually showed up rather than going out with Alfredo. the night of your birthday. I remember that one, man. I'm always there for you in those moments.
By the way, but yeah, thanks for bringing that up. Unbelievable. Well, it also revived, I think, Salada's season as well. If you can get a point here, if he gets another loss, just for morale. I mean, we need to have good morale going into these games rather than them have a leader kind of speak out and try to rally the troops. We really need to get a result.
Tim, was he wearing – was Salada's wearing a Canadian tuxedo in that match?
I think his shirt was denim. I can't tell, but it was definitely tucked into denim jeans and a belt, and it looked a bit Canadian tuxedo. Maybe he picked that up when he saw him in New York, a little close to Canada.
You know, that – I really tickled me. I think, you know, it was just a weird outfit given that, you know, it's like summertime in Spain and Valencia, and he's wearing denim on denim. And of course, you know, it's the Canadian tuxedo. I mean, it was really interesting move by Salades. Get on the show, man. Let's talk shop.
Should we send him some gear? Should we start?
I mean, he needs. You know, I mean, when it's cold outside, he doesn't know what to wear, and then when it's warm outside, he wears denim on denim. I feel for the guy.
I think that's it, Sam. I don't know any other parting thoughts before we meet again next week after our Real Madrid win.
No, but I will say that we are turners.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Tim, how about – okay, yeah, sorry. I would just say I don't have anything to add, but to our listeners, we are going to modify our schedule. We are going to be doing a podcast after every game. So we'll try to be some point between the Real Madrid match and our subsequent match, we will release another pod. And we tried to videocast this one, but – They banned us.
They banned us on YouTube, so let's figure something out.
They banned us. Yeah, our MySpace content and Tim's agriculture content, they've been trying to get their hands on it, and because our lawyers haven't relented yet, it's been a long negotiation, so it's holding up our Valencia content, but hopefully we'll get that sorted out soon.
Too much good content.
Yeah, I mean – so much good content, man. I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy out there.
Well, all right, Tim.
All right, well, Tim, have a
Oh, well,
until next time.
Until next time. Until next game against Real. I will see you afterwards or during if we can figure out the live stream. And I'm Moons, man.
Yeah, I'm Moons. And Tim, have a great rest of the day. Your mom told me that tonight is your firefighter-themed party for your birthday month. So I know you always wanted to be a firefighter, but they rejected you because they said your arms were too weak. So I hope you get to live through some of your childhood fantasies tonight when you dress up as a fireman.
How do you know so much about my life? I don't know who's telling you all this. Unbelievable.
I don't know, man. It's really good.
If someone in my family's leaking all of this to you, that's what I can figure out. Unbelievable, man.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I'll connect with you soon. Right. Yeah, see you on the Twitter sphere against Real Madrid.
Okay, sounds good. Bye.
Hey, bud.